Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Emily Intravia, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
Yay! Woo! Emily, we've had you on. We had you on last year. It was in the fall, wasn't it?
It would have been in the fall, November-ish. No, it was summertime,
that
actually. End of summer.
That, yeah.
It was August, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. Time just moves. I don't pay attention.
Yeah, I've heard that. I heard time keeps on slipping into the future.
That's what they tell me.
I heard that on the radio somewhere. Good to have you back. Let's go through the paperwork real quick, and we'll talk about all your fun things that you're handling throughout the I don't know what I'm saying. You can just go to fatguysatthemovies.com and check us out. You can go to iTunes and search Fat Guys at the Movies or Fat Guys Network and download all of our stuff. Subscribe so you get everything to your iTunes immediately. As close to the internet as it works. And then you can also go to facebook.com/FGATM and like us. You can email us, fatguysatfilmschoolrejects.com, or you can leave us a voicemail at 740-205-6456. Emily,
Yo. Remind
everybody where you're from, what you do, and where they can hear you and talk to you and all that good stuff.
Okay, well, I write about movies over at deadlydollshouse.com. That's generally horror movies. For December, I did a lot of just bad Christmas movies, including a lot of Lifetime movies. Lifetime makes a lot of movies.
Actually, I think the bad Christmas movies are also on ABC Family a lot.
Yeah. And the best thing was Netflix put all of them on Instant Watch.
Oh,
so, you know, the romantic comedy starring Sabrina the Teenage Witch and A.C. Slater, where she kidnaps him.
Holiday in Handcuffs.
Holiday
yes,
in
I
handcuffs.
Know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm well aware of that.
Well, the whole rule about it, I think, is that it's movies that TV actresses film while they're trying to lose baby weight. Yeah, because you can tell, like, Jenny Garth from 90210, because every 90210 actress does one.
Of course.
Yeah, she did one where it was about a dog that brought her together with her husband, and she had to decide, did she want to get this, like, million-dollar high-paying job or be married and live in a vineyard? So that's the kind of conflict that these actresses face in these movies.
These stupid dogs are meddling in their lives.
Ugh, awful. But now I'm back to horror movies. And actually, come February, I do something neat. I do February's month of the Vertically Challenged Villains, where it's all movies about killer short things. So either killer kids.
Is that because February is the shortest month?
It's because it's the shortest month. And it's also my birthday month. And I'm short. So it's kind of an honor of me as well.
Yes. Forget about Black History Month. It's all about
you. Come on now. They can't take everything away from us. Now, if you're short and black, though, you're totally welcome there.
So if there's a horror movie with Tony Cox in it, you're there.
I'm there. Gary Coleman, get working from Beyond the Grave. Oh, I forgot you're 10. Ooh. I'm sure he did a horror movie. I'll find him.
I'm sure there's a zombie Gary Coleman running around somewhere.
If he's in a Christmas Carol-like movie, I'm sure he did a zombie movie. Who didn't?
Wow.
Come on.
Who didn't?
But you can also find me as a podcaster. I do Gleecast. It's GLEEKAST. We're on iTunes and Podomatic, and that is about Glee and occasionally other random things like our Mommy Dearest commentary or Step Up trilogy and so on.
You did a whole commentary for the Step Up trilogy?
Commentary. We just did a kind of review of all three of them.
Okay.
But we have done commentary episodes on the High School Musical movies. We've done the first two. We still need the third one, and apparently Sharpay had a spinoff movie, so we'll get to
that. Sharpay's Fabulous Adventure.
Yes, I've heard it's very pink.
It's extremely pink, yeah.
Okay. We did a commentary track for Beastly. Who did a commentary track for Beastly?
Who saw Beastly? I mean, that's the fact that how many people were in on this?
Oh,
like
not
three?
Many. Well, no, yeah, it was me, my co-host Erica, and then Fozzie from the podcast has been on your show before.
So that's three.
His partner George. So we had four people plus dogs watching the movie. That may have been
that
everyone.
That doubles the entire theatrical run audience of Beastly, I believe.
Just about. I'm glad to do my part, even though it's terrible. But we did a commentary track on it. So, hey, if you're ever curious, that's one way you could watch the movie.
Wow. That's great.
Yeah. And then when we've been on hiatus for a while, but I'm also part of Girls on Film radio podcast, where we are a bunch of women who look at more male-ish movies. So.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Yeah, awesome. That's me.
There you go. Well, thank you again for being on the show. We'll it's good to have you back. And we're hitting into 2012. Do you have any New Year's resolutions you're breaking already?
This year I decided not to do any. Last year, my big resolution, aside from like, I'm going to exercise and stuff, was I was going to watch one Kurosawa movie a month because I'd never seen any. All right. And I got until about March. And I mean, they're great. All of them I saw were great. It's just, it started to be a point where I was like, oh crap, it's the 29th. I guess I have to watch the Kurosawa movie now. Oh, here's 3 hours of my life. And
like, enough with the samurai.
Oh my God,
jeez.
Here we go again. They're just stabbing themselves. And
you're just doing Star Wars all over again.
I'm learning about humanity. Oh, the pain. And then I realized, like, no, he makes really good movies and I'm treating them like they're chores. So I can't do that to myself. I just need to watch them when I watch them. So my resolution is to just go back to the gym because I'm boring like that.
The resolution. Yeah. Cause this year I didn't do actual New Year's resolutions. Which my resolution, I guess, would mean I didn't have a New Year's resolution. So I'm actually successful in that so far. Normally people say, oh, New Year's resolution, Jenna, breaking them. Because you say, my resolution is to exercise every day. And that lasts, you know, until the 5th.
Yeah, about a week, yeah.
You know, and so this is proof that it's just no one wants to exercise. I can resolve to not have any resolutions, and I'm not like all of a sudden on the 15th going, I suddenly resolved to do, you know, like, whoa, I said I wasn't going to.
Right.
You know,
So I can't break that resolution.
Yeah. No, it's totally sticking.
Yeah. It's all about the language you use to justify it to yourself.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. Jim. Yeah. None of that. None of that garbage. I don't believe it. I think it's all like it's a conspiracy.
Yeah. Well, I just started going and I'm sure I'm going to like die of being sick by next week. Cause
are you
going
to actually like exercise at the gym or are you just going to go to the gym and like have a smoothie?
Well, you know, I went the first time and I was all excited. Cause I'm like, yeah, I'm going after work. Yeah. Great. And I had to stand there for about 10 minutes waiting for a machine because everybody apparently had the same idea to go after work. So I was just standing there like, what do I do here? I can't do anything. And then I got a machine and I was about to get off and I'm like, crap. There's like, I turned around and there was like 10 people lined up waiting. I'm like, no, I guess I'll do another 5 minutes on here. I can't give this up.
Was this like what, January?
Yeah, this was about the 7th or so.
Oh, well, yeah. I'm sure now. By now, there's no way.
And it's cold outside, so nobody's going out there.
Yeah, yeah. That's the beauty of fitness. Speaking of fitness, actually, this has nothing to do with fitness. We're going to just jump into the first review, which is Underworld Awakening.
Well, you got to be fit to fit into that spandex, right?
Yeah, or at least have a lot of Vaseline.
Yeah.
So, Kate Beckinsale returns as the original death dealer hunting a vampire at Lycan. Hybrid.
Everything they've told you is a lie.
Subject to escape, it's somewhere in the building.
It'll kill us all.
Put it down. Now!
For 12 years, I was held captive by the humans. The world I once knew has changed. Vampires and lichens are now the hunted.
If we are to survive as a species, we must resist the humans.
Whatever.
This one they didn't screen for press. I don't think he screened it for anybody, so it gets a preemptive suck. I liked the first Underworld. I did not like the first Underworld. I thought the second one was okay. The third one, that's sort of like the idiot redheaded stepchild.
Oh, I kind of loved. I've only seen the third one. Mm. And granted, I saw the third one right after the Friday the 13th remake, which I hated. So yeah. Seeing Underworld and having no context for it. And what do I get? I get like a period film. I get medieval stuff. I get Bill Nighy without a shirt on walking around. I get Michael Sheen without a shirt and with long hair.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, this is actually really great. So I don't know how good this one will be because it doesn't have either of those actors, I don't think.
Yeah. What's so funny about this one is Kate Beckinsale, who's British. It sounds like she's trying to do a British accent in this movie.
Weird. But she also isn't a good actress, so that makes a difference,
no,
I think.
No, she's not.
No.
Anyway, so it gets a preemptive suck because they didn't screen it for us. So, you know, take that, Screen Gems.
Jerks.
So, anyways, let's move on. When we come back, we're going to be talking about George Lucas. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We were just talking about Underworld Awakening. You were really throwing down some love for Underworld. What was that? Which one was it?
I think it was The Rise of the Lycans. It was The Rise of the Werewolves.
Yeah. They call them Lycans.
Not a werewolves.
That's sort of like calling them the wolf pack. You know what? At least in these movies, the wolves don't like telepathically talk to each other and like... imprint
on babies.
They're
just wolves, man. They're just wolves. You just turn into wolves. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. These are pretty, you know, mean, crazy, nasty
wolves. Here's another reason, weird soft spot I have for the third film, is I had read, the movie came out around the same time as either The Queen or Frost Nixon. I can't remember. And Michael Sheen was giving an interview with, I believe it was New York Newsday, which is a Long Island newspaper. And the reporter kind of asked him this very kind of condescending question about, like, oh, so what is it like to go from, you know, a movie that's so serious and esteemed as The Queen to then something so silly like the Underworld films? And he was so offended by the question and basically responded as, wow, I really don't know how to answer that. I don't see why would you put down this film that I've done that I'm very proud of. I have a good time doing it. I think they tell a good story. And I treat all my characters, I give them all the same attention. And I believe in, you know, Lucius Vanderwolf just as much as I do Tony Blair, blah, blah, blah. And so I've always had this, like, yeah, Michael Sheen, yeah, that he kind of, you know, was able to stand up and say, hey, I made this movie and I'm proud of it.
Yeah.
And I think he should be, because the third one to me was kind of fun. And Bill Nighy owns that film.
Oh, yeah, he too. Well, he's also one that's in a lot of these esteemed movies, but he also just loves the delicious nature of being crazy and
having fun with it.
And the insane bad guy. Well, you're right. And I think not Michael Sheen rules. And I'll tell you, when you take The Queen, I mean, obviously Frost Nixon had a lot more to it. I mean, but The Queen, he has like three scenes in The Queen.
Right.
I mean, it's not much. It's just you play stuffy British prime. And it's not like it wasn't like Helen Mirren's part of The Queen where she was, you know, there was all these complex levels. I mean, he was just playing Tony Blair asking, you know, when he came to take office. So
did he take his shirt off in The Queen?
No.
He took it off in the Lycan movie a lot.
He had glorious hair.
Yes. Yes, he did.
But that's because Michael Sheen's awesome. And I contend he's a fantastic actor. He's one of the best actors.
And he does comedy well. He was great on 30 Rock.
Yeah, I love Michael Sheen. He's one of my one of my favorite actors. He's sort of like if I talk to the like esteemed actors that I just absolutely love. A lot of them I think are just high on themselves.
Right.
But I love him. I love Jeffrey Rush. These are people that I think
I would want to have a beer with.
Yeah, well, because they can do movies like Jeffrey Rush is the same way. He'll do a movie like The King's Speech, but then he'll also have Paul Rubens break wind in his face in Mystery Men.
Yeah, that and he gives his all to everything, and that's what matters.
Exactly, and that's an important thing to do. Mm-hmm. Not every... Agreed. See, watch Meryl Streep try that. She wouldn't do that.
No, She-Devil. She is wonderful in She-Devil.
That's true.
That nobody... Everybody always wants to make fun of She-Devil, but it's actually quite good.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I'll give you that. She-Devil, it's been a long
underrated
time.
Underrated little
that.
90s comedy.
Yeah, yeah. Let's move on to the next movie, which is Red Tails, in which George Lucas takes a break from Star Wars to tell the story of the Tuskegee Airmen.
We have a right to fight for our country the same as every other American. We will not go away.
I can't afford the kind of losses my bombers have been suffering. Can you help save lives?
If you get us new planes, we can help your boys.
Nothing's difficult.
Everything's a challenge.
Through adversity to the stars.
From the last plane, to the last bullet, to the last minute, to the last man, we fight.
We fight.
We fight.
We fight.
We fight.
We fight.
I'm assuming you haven't seen this.
I have not seen it. No.
What are your initial thoughts about it, though?
I mean, I think good on him for doing something different. George, he's such an odd duck because you wonder why he started out making movies and then after Star Wars, he didn't direct until Phantom Menace, right?
Mm-hmm. He's only directed four movies. Five.
Yeah, and it's so strange to me. So, I mean, I respect him for trying something new at this point in his career when, in fairness, he could just sit back on his mounds of money and be comfortable.
Yeah.
I have no desire to see anything he does probably ever again because I've sat through the prequels. I own the prequels. I've watched them multiple times. And no, I'm sorry, people, but Revenge of the Sith is not the best one. It does not get better. I find redeeming qualities because I'm a Star Wars fan.
Yeah.
But did he write Red Tails or is he just directing it?
He executive produced it and he didn't write it, but I mean, it's his passion project. He's wanted to do this since the late 80s, actually. And it just never got off the ground. Ha ha. No pun intended. And he also was in charge of directing reshoots. He directed some of the reshoots, but it's directed by another guy.
Ah, okay. I assume this was his big return.
Yeah, well, but no, he's only directed, if you don't count he's only directed two movies outside of the Star Wars. He only directed four of the six Star Wars movies, which was the first and then the prequels. And the only other movies were American Graffiti and THX.
Which essentially was a student film stretched out anyway.
Yeah, so I mean, these are not, and if you look, he's not a director when it comes to, he's a technocrat is really what he is. He loves technology. And even movies like THX-1138, it's so steeped in technology. And,
and in fairness, he's, you know, done a lot of great things in the past 20, 30 years that, you know, aren't as high profile because you don't think of someone when you, if they're not directing a project.
Exactly.
Like, he's responsible for a lot of things, which I know we'll talk about later.
Sure.
So, I mean, sure, if he has a passion about something, and I mean, that's, you know, the Tuskegee Airmen is a great history. You know, there's more to learn about that.
Yeah.
I just, you know, it's hard to take him seriously, I think, as a filmmaker in any way now.
See, here's the thing. First of all, I got to say this to everybody. All of you people out there who have been complaining incessantly about Star Wars, and everybody who last, you know, summer leading up to the September release of the Blu-rays, who are complaining about blinking Ewoks and adding, you know, changing the effects and continuing to tinker with the movies. Everybody who's ever wanted to even think to buy a Han Shot First t-shirt. Shame on you if you don't go see this movie and make it a huge hit. It's your own doggone fault that you're going to be complaining in 3 weeks when Phantom Menace 3D comes out. Because
in 3D, right?
Yeah. I mean, even if this movie, it is not great, but this is him trying to do something different.
Like let you him need to encourage him.
Yeah, encourage him, and then maybe he'll leave your Star Wars alone. So what's don't the sit point? Don't play both sides of the fence and be like, oh, this sucked. And then when he goes back and he starts tinkering again with Star Wars, it's your own damn fault.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. We need to, you know, you need to let him think he's doing it right.
Yeah. With that said, there's a certain quality of this movie that just feels like he's saying, I'm sorry there was only one black guy in the original trilogy.
Ah, okay.
You know, it does feel a bit apologetic because it throws down so hard on this thing. It's a trite movie. It does a lot of things we've seen again. In fact, if you've seen the movie Flyboys, which is about World War I pilots starring James Franco, a lot of the same plot points and bits. It's literally like, because nobody else saw Flyboys, it's almost like they said, well, let's just take all these plot points. The guy's going to fall in love with a pretty girl from the local town in Flyboys. He's in France, and in Red Tails they're in Italy, but, you know, same diff. And they have the German fighting ace who's shooting people down from the sky, who's the sort of antagonist, because he just shows
Germans
up.
Are always bad.
Yeah, shame on the Germans, you know. So I remember when I first saw a trailer for this, I was doing The Golden Briefcase with Tim Buell and Jeremy Kirk. I believe that's who, that's where I saw this, and they had me watch it, and they asked what I thought. And I said, it just looks very TV movie-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And this one does. It feels like a TV movie with really great effects. And the dogfight scenes, don't get me wrong, the dogfight scenes are amazing. They're great. And you can really see the influence of the of the Star Wars movies on that, because you got them, you know, Red 5, Red 6 talking to each other, and the TIE fighter battle. That stuff's great. The story, not so much.
For the movie so that you give it your money and then go sneak into Joyful Noise.
Exactly, yeah, because, well, I can't guarantee that movie's any good either. But anyways, this movie runs too long. There's too many characters. It's very predictable. Dialogue's awful. I mean, literally, the opening scene shows these fighters escorting bombers, and they look down and they go, there's the German, let's go get him, you know. And,
well, because we know George Lucas is renowned for his dialogue.
Well, that's the thing. But it doesn't have that charm of the Star Wars movies. Once they get out of the planes, it's just like, you know, it's snooze-erific.
Right, because you don't care, you know, there's no
robot. And that's nothing against the Tuskegee Airmen. That's amazing.
Yeah, oh yeah.
What this group of pilots did. But it's very flat. It feels very much like a, you know, like a Lifetime. Not even like the original Tuskegee Airmen HBO movie.
Like a TNT movie.
Yeah. So I'm going to say it kind of sucks. We got to
give it your money.
Yeah, give it your money, or it's your own fault. Anyways, we're going to move on with the trailer for the next one, which is Haywire. Steven Soderbergh directs this Bourne-style action film about a Marine who's double-crossed in the field.
Negotiations broke down. Fix it.
I have an assignment. It's like a paid holiday.
Starting when?
Go, go, go!
The story will be that she's gone rogue.
You can tell me right now why you sold me out, or you can tell me in 10 minutes when I have my hands around your throat.
I've never done a woman before.
You shouldn't think of her as being a woman. That would be a mistake.
miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh, yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys of the Movies. We are in the infamous middle segment where Emily can cuss now. And she called it the cussy one in the break.
I try to, because I do curse a lot and I try not to. I tried to take a lesson from the Fantastic Mr. Fox and just use the word cuss in place of actual cursing. It rarely works.
Yeah. That was my Fantastic Mr. Fox noise.
No, I'm impressive.
Yeah. Sorry. I wasn't like shutting you up. I'm like, click, click.
Shut up, quiet. You.
Shut up. Who gave you
the right to talk?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, one more thing about Red Tails, because I had to get out of there and play the Haywire trailer. But when it comes to Red Tails, it's...
Which sounds like, I just keep thinking DuckTales.
Ooh.
It's very distracting, but carry on.
Red Tails. Ooh. Well, that's what they were actually called that. I mean, I don't know the history. I don't. I'm going to go out there and
because
say that.
Because you're white.
What? Because I'm white?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I am too, and I don't know it either. So that's
I don't know. There's a lot of stuff I don't know. You can't see people. Like, what's the 67th Airborne? I don't know. You know. But, you know, this is it just feels the storytelling in Red Tails feels extremely. It just feels trite, and everything that happens, it's just one of those things that I'm like that can't be true because they lay it on so thick, you know. And I'm sure that there's, and it's funny because I went on Wikipedia and looked up some of it, and I'm like, oh, okay, I guess that did happen. You know what I mean? And you're like, oh, well, that did happen. You know, that did happen because it's not like. It, nothing more than the fact that you're just like the presentation of it. You're just like,
right.
Well,
like,
that just
I'm
going
to go
really
on a limb and guess
cheesy.
Is the hero, like the main hero. Does he happen to be the best looking guy?
Well, that's the thing. It's no one person's movie.
Okay.
There's no Luke Skywalker, so to speak. Mm-hmm. There's the younger guy, and then there's his friend. But like the squadron leader, he's got a drinking problem. So they're dealing with that. And I'm like, oh, that's why I'm saying it feels like a Lifetime movie.
Sure.
And you're in planes getting shot at by Germans, somebody's going to get killed, you know? So
and it's going to be that likable guy that, you know, you liked him, but he didn't have as big of a future.
It's just, yeah. And there's something where you're just like, oh, that person's totally dead.
Right.
You know? And part of it is also they have these characters and they try to make it give that sort of Pixar rogue gallery of characters type thing.
Mm-hmm.
But aside from that very mainstay, you know, the four or five in the main cast, it feels like they went and they plucked the people who did Amos and Andy and had them make the characters. They literally have a guy who sits around playing a guitar all the time.
Of course.
And he talks like this. This is how he talks. And I'm like, wow, seriously? That's what you're giving us, that character. And this guy, this actor's okay doing it. And like they got a mechanic and he's got he wears the
overalls
the sweet,
with the one thing down.
Yeah. And he's got the hat that, that kind of flops up and he's like, don't you mess with my plane, blah, blah, blah. You know, just like, oh my God, these are the most stereotypically offensive characters at times.
Yeah.
It reminds me, did you see the movie Miracle of St. Anima? And
infamous middle segment indeed.
Whoa, what happened?
I did not see the Miracle of St. Anima. That sounds a little outside of my genre.
That was not by Spike Lee. That was by Spiked Lee, I think.
Oh, who he then sued for using his name.
That was a totally different movie. Wow. Anyways, no, the Miracle of St. Anna. Did you see that movie?
I did not.
That was one. It was Spike Lee's directing it about an African American unit during.
Okay.
It was, I think, World War II, and they're in Italy, and it was a massacre that happened that they were at, and part of the problem was they're trying to show, oh well, you know, this African American unit was just as good as the white units and that sort of thing. But as you watch the movie, you're just like, no, they were insubordinate. There was the one guy that was chasing tail all the time, and this guy was an idiot, and this guy was huge and fat and couldn't do this. I'm like, this was a terrible unit, at least the way they presented it. And it's like, you're doing no favors to yourself saying that this was a professional.
But then is it better than the flip side where it's like they're all really noble?
Yeah, I don't know. I think you need to have somewhere in between.
I think Glory did that well.
Okay, I haven't seen Glory.
I mean, Glory, you know, it's Civil War, so it's a very different setting and such. But it does a good job, I think, if memory serves. Like, you do have, like, the Morgan Freeman character, who's really noble. But then you have, what's his name? Denzel Washington, and, like, the one role I've ever really liked him in. Because he plays, like, this fiery young guy who's angry and mean and, like, and insubordinate and everything. But, I mean, he has reasons for it, because he's a former slave, and...
that happens. But and that will make you pissed off, yeah.
Yeah, and the problem with that movie is, I think the movie is flawed because it's seen very much from like the white men's point of view still. But I think it does a stronger job of giving it to you in a way that's not so, you know, not to use the word whitewash because it's the wrong word. Yeah. But like it's where they're not perfect and great just because they were black men. Yeah. To show the warts and the, you know, the ultimate, I guess, effect of it. But.
Yeah, you have to have a certain level of complexity there, but you can take it too far just because you want to get, because the whole thing is you got to give somebody, everybody's got to have their struggle as a character. And sometimes you give everybody too much struggle.
Yeah.
It just makes they all look like idiots. And that you get that a little bit with Red Tails, and they just have stuff that it's one of those things that if they were not, I can't imagine reading this script and saying, let's greenlight this and not have it seem really racist and offensive.
Right.
At times. I mean, they literally have a character who's praying to Black Jesus. he has a little picture of a Black Jesus, and he's praying to Black Jesus. He keeps referring to, oh, please, Black Jesus, help me. I'm just like, wow, seriously? Again, like I said, it's like that guy who's I'm going to talk like this all the time. Yeah. This is how I talk. And I'm like, I know people who fit into stereotypes, but... they do this a little, and they lay it. They push the buttons so deliberately. There's a scene where they're walking through town, and they go to this one guy goes into an officers' club, and of course, all the angry white officers are like, "Get out of here!" And then of course that one guy has to throw down the N-word, which I can't even say on a podcast because people will be like, "You can't say that." I'm like, well, I'm quoting no, you can't say that because that's bad. And here's the catch-22 on it.
It's really hard being white sometimes.
I can watch this, I can watch this and say, well, that was stupid because it's just so, it's
cliche.
Like, it's exactly what you'd expect. Mm-hmm. But in the audience that I saw this with, they did a word of mouth screening. It was partly press, but it also had word of mouth. And if there were a lot of obviously this is something that's going to be of interest to the African American community.
Mm-hmm, so, sure.
You know, there was a. It wasn't a huge audience, but, you know, there was a good couple dozen just members of the public there, and it was a lot of African-Americans. And when that scene's you get the gasps from the audience, and, you know, you're like, well, you know, it pushed that button.
Yeah.
And it gets a response, so I don't know. I mean, we'll see. I will be very curious to see how well this does, simply because I don't think Lucas fans are going to embrace it.
No, I don't see that happening. I mean, I don't think Lucas has fans anymore. There's Star Wars fans, but I don't think there's George Lucas fans out there.
I'm okay with the prequels and the changes. I don't bellyache about that. There's way
you're okay with them. You're not like someone who, like 20 years ago, you would probably go see this because it was the guy who directed Star Wars, and you know. But now it wouldn't. I don't think it would make anybody go see a movie, but I think it would deter people.
I don't know. I think the whole thing is Lucas is so tied to Star Trek. But that was his cross to bear in the 80s. He couldn't do anything in the 80s. I mean, that's actually why he kind of took a break from Star Wars and then worked on all this technology stuff. He couldn't do movies without he's the guy. He was typecast. I mean, he was, it was the same thing happened to Anthony Perkins after he did Psycho, couldn't do a damn role without being Norman Bates. And George Lucas, ever since Star Wars, he could not be. The only thing that he did outside of Star Wars that really anybody cared about was the Indiana Jones series. But even though it's not Star Wars, it falls in the same wheelhouse.
It's related. It's still adventure. It's still Harrison Ford.
But you know, I just showed my kids the original trilogy. And it was the special edition DVD release because I didn't get the Blu-rays. I didn't get them to review. And I'm not gonna. I wasn't gonna pay. I mean, if I were for movies. Well, if I didn't have a stack a foot tall of DVDs that I have to watch, I probably would get I'd just devour it. But since I got so many other things to watch, I just don't have time. And I'm like, by the time I'd watch it, there'll be like 3D DVDs or 3D Blu-rays out that I can maybe request from the publicist. But anyways, I showed, and people like, I put on Facebook and Twitter, and they're like, did you show them the original uncut ones? I'm like, no.
Then were they like, you're a bad father.
Yeah, and I'm just like, no, because, you know, and having gone back and watched them, I can honestly say that there's a certain number of changes that are actually good changes, that they enhance something. They really, like, a great example is what they did with Cloud City and Empire Strikes Back.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I remember, because Cloud City was when they did the re-releases, which I saw in the theater back in the late 90s. And yeah. I remember thinking the same thing. I'm like, wow, this looks right. This looks like Cloud City.
They weren't walking there. All the corridors were blocked off in the original, and they opened it up.
Right.
The Wampa scene. The Wampa scene where they cut to the Wampa and you actually see the Wampa eating something in stand-up. Right. That's fantastic.
That works. I think Empire works really well, actually.
Yeah.
The changes in Empire were for the better, but I think in Star Wars, it stands out in a bad way. The Jabba scene and the just random... what are they? Not Tauntauns. What are the creatures on, like, the big mammoth thingies on Tatooine?
In Tatooine.
They just look like CGI. And
it did, and that's, I think, part of the reason why, and I haven't watched the Blu-ray, so I don't know, and apparently that's, I think, in watching these DVDs, which came out, what, in 2004, 2000, whatever, 2005, watching these again, I'm watching it, and I said, okay, this makes, I can see why he'd go back and tinker with these scenes again, because... I mean, Jesus, they did those special editions in 97.
Right.
It's been 14 years since, so he can clean stuff up. And there are scenes that are a little awkward. The Jabba scene's awkward, but the Jabba scene with the actors, awkward.
Yeah.
It's not the best. And I get it, but it's equivalent of a deleted scene.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it. You know, the only thing I don't like about the Han shot first Greedo it's not that Han shoots first or Greedo shoots first. It's that Greedo misses him from 2 feet away. That's what bothers me.
Good point.
That's the only thing I don't like about that. So, I mean, there are stuff that you kind of look at him like, eh. But there's some really great, like the additions he did in the dogfight scenes and the, and you know, that ending, you know, the final battle of Yavin. That was really cool. And then, like, Return of the Jedi, he adds stuff. And I know people bitch about, like, the stuff in Jabba's palace. But you go back and watch the original. It looks like they ran out of money when they got to Cy Snoodles and her band. Max Rebo looks like a hand puppet.
Yeah, and then they opened up the vault of the Star Wars Holiday Special. They're like, do we have any puppets left over from here?
Yeah, I mean, as you've watched that, the original singing scene.
I mean, the problem
still
to me
like
is
shit.
it just looks so incongruous with the rest of the film.
You're right. You're right, and I think
that's
what
hurts it for me.
Yeah, but ultimately it's like you hit these things every now and then, and it's like, oh, and you hit these moments, and you're like, oh, I am watching the special editions. You forget because you get into it, because 95% of the movie's the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
And so I still love them. I don't bellyache them. I think when the DVDs or Blu-rays were coming out, people were just freaking out, and I'm just like, seriously,
there are
chill.
Other things in the world to worry about.
Yeah, they're like, screw this genocide crap. Lucas needs to die. You know what I mean? So,
but the world.
Anyways, now let's move on to Haywire. I actually saw a double feature of this. I saw Red Tails. I had to go up to Cleveland to see Red Tails, and then literally walked on the other side of the theater and went to go see Haywire.
I'm really interested to hear what you thought of Haywire. I obviously haven't seen it.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued. I didn't really care. I saw the trailer a couple times and I went to the movies and I'm like, all right, it's Soderbergh, so I'm sure it's good no matter what. Like, it's going to be better than, like, probably Contraband. But then I just read an interview today in the AV Club. They had an interview with him that was just so, I forgot how interesting he is when he talks about his films.
Yeah.
And he talks a little bit about this movie, and like, he just made a lot of points that made me think, you know, maybe this will be interesting, but please tell me, because you actually have seen it.
Yeah, here's the thing. It's the trailers were interesting to me, but I wasn't sold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the trailers made it look very just action-y. And from what I understand, he plays with structure again, like he did in The Limey.
Well, what's neat about it is I would say this is what he did with the heist film, with the Ocean's movies, is him doing this sort of rogue agent genre of an action movie. It's it's very typical Soderbergh. So it has a lot of his things to it. It has a lot of his music elements to it. Mm-hmm. And it's unconventionally shot and unconventionally edited together. So it just doesn't feel like just
every
another
other movie that would be on the same shelf as it.
Yeah. Like there's a whole scene where there's a big chase and them planning to do it. And he does a thing with like split screens and moving around. Mm-hmm. And he has that sort of that jazz kind of, the soundtrack from Ocean's 11 is the best I could describe. And I'm like, it shouldn't work, but it does.
Right.
And it's just because he kind of thinks outside of the box and takes a different approach, mm-hmm. and it works. And the woman who plays it, what's it, Gina
Moreno, I think.
Yeah, Gina Moreno.
Carano?
She is obviously she's first and foremost a MMA fighter,
right?
And has done like fitness modeling and that sort of thing. She's not an actor. But what's nice is if you actually look at the character, she just plays she can deliver the lines, mm-hmm. as that sort of emotionless deadpan, which works for her character. But he doesn't. And this is his genius of this movie, is he doesn't rely on her too much for her acting.
Okay.
He relies on her enough to do what she needs to do, but it's not a big emotional piece for her.
Right. And I think he's smart about using, because I remember I didn't see The Girlfriend Experience, but I know it's similar. It's a non-actor, a porn star who is not somebody who's used to delivering lines. Yeah. And I think he's like, from based on this interview too, like I think he was just interested in this woman and kind of her talents and was like, all right, I'm going to build a movie around you.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to give you the Oscar speech because you don't need it. I'm just going to make use of your skills, which is fighting.
Yeah, and if you gave her the Oscar speech, you'd end up with what Taylor Lautner did in Abduction, where he thinks he's a great actor,
right.
And he really works, and it's just embarrassing because you're just like, oh no.
No, Taylor. No. Just take your shirt off. That's fine.
No, yeah, you shouldn't be
grow up
crying.
5 years and then take your shirt off, please.
Yeah, you shouldn't be crying in this scene. No, no. So she's, and so it doesn't rely on her acting, and it's different. It's not your typical rogue spy. Mm-hmm. Or rogue agent movie, but it fits completely in that genre. But he just does things a little differently, and it's got some really funny moments. It's got some really clever moments.
And it's got Michael Fassbender, right?
Fassbender's in it, yeah. Okay. The only thing, this is my big complaint. There's of course because she's a badass fighter, and she's beating people up. I am getting a little tired of movies where they just like put somebody in there and they're just so badass they can do this. And because we've seen the trailer, she gets in this big fight with Channing Tatum in a diner. It happens right at the beginning of the movie. And he picks her up and slams her against something. And I'm like, I don't care what kind of a badass you are.
That would hurt.
Channing Tatum's a big fucking dude. I mean, this guy is, when she's fighting Fassbender, it's believable because Fassbender's a fit guy and he's not small, but he's not a Hulk. He's a, mm-hmm. he's physically there. They look like they can be relatively evenly matched. And it reminds me of Columbiana. There's a scene in Columbiana where she's fighting this guy and this guy like she grabs him from behind and he runs backwards and slams into a wall. I'm like, it's Zoe Saldana. She's
like
the
size.
She weighs
less than my cat. Come on.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I'm sure that if I fought Gina, whatever her name is, she'd beat the living shit out of me. Mm-hmm. Usually I pay for that. That's cool.
Hey, it's sexy.
Yeah. But just, I'm sorry, there's a mass issue,
right.
between her and Channing Tatum that doesn't quite work, but that's a minor complaint. I mean, overall, I think it's a really cute, it's a clever, neat movie, and not at all exactly what you'd expect.
That's refreshing to know.
Yeah. So I'm going to say it rocks. That's one
cool.
to check out.
Cool.
The next one, we'll hit this one real quick. It's extremely loud and incredibly close. I talked a little bit about it with, I forget who it was. I think it was when I had Mel Valentin on.
Okay.
A couple weeks ago, but it's going wide this week. And in this movie, a boy tries to come to terms with his father's death at 9/11.
After he died, I found this key in my dad's closet. He must have wanted me to find something.
The clues, of course.
What was the dad wanted me to find? Nothing made sense.
It's never gonna make sense because it doesn't.
What was the lesson dad wanted me to learn? You met my dad? Isn't everyone somehow odd?
This one is such a typical award film.
I was going to say, can I give it a subtitle of extremely loud and incredibly close to getting nominated for Oscars, but it won't.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's picked up a couple awards. Like, I actually, I'm a voting member of the Broadcast Film Critics Association. And Thomas Horn won the young, young actor of the year or something like that. I don't think he deserved it. I think that, I really think that, I voted for Saoirse Ronan is who I thought should have won for Hannah. Or I think
she's been around a while, though. I feel like she must have won that award before.
Yeah, well, she probably did for Atonement, because a lot of people she got a lot of attention for that. But I think Asa Butterfield from, I think this is who it was, from Hugo, should have won too. Part of it too, and this is it's an interesting thing, because the character that Thomas Horn plays in Extremely Loud, Incredibly Close, is he doesn't have Asperger's, but there's a scene in there where they talk about how he was like tested, and it's sort of like, well, he might have Asperger's.
Okay.
And I have a friend on Facebook who's got Asperger's, and he actually posted something the other day talking about, I think it was Joyful Noise, and he mentioned he heard that there was a character who had Asperger's. He's like, it's nice to see people are bringing attention to it. And I think it's great. I think it's something that people should have attention to, but I think it's a bit of an exploitation thing at times with filmmakers, because they're like, oh, we can have them be different. You know what I mean?
But we don't have to cast someone who, you know, like has Down syndrome. We can have them be different, but they can look, you know, like anyone else kind of thing.
Exactly. And it becomes somewhat exploitative in Hollywood, because there's so many movies that have them in there. And I think it's good to bring awareness to it. But I think at this point they have a character in Grey's Anatomy who's got Asperger's. They got a character in Glee.
Well, no, actually, I think Glee actually was pretty clever with it, because they have a character who says she has Asperger's and keeps blaming her behavior on Asperger's. Like, she'll say a mean comment. She's like, oh, remember Asperger's. And I think they're actually making fun of that exact thing of somebody using Asperger's to, you know, to get away with being a jerk.
Okay. So you think that they're Glee that was, you think they're that meta on that?
I think. I sometimes give Glee more credit for being meta than it is, but I think they've been careful about like always having it in such a beat where it's kind of not like that Asperger's is played for a laugh, but that it's more making fun of the people that would use it as an excuse to behave poorly.
Okay. Well, I'll give you that.
Yeah. America's Next Top Model had a girl with Asperger's on there.
Well, whoopee-doo.
That was when I first learned what Asperger's was.
Wow. But anyways, so this movie is just, it's one of those that just, it just slathers it on. It's not a bad movie, and it's that thing if you want that emotional experience, but it ultimately it's very contrived. It's extremely contrived.
And it was based on the novel, book, right? By the same guy who did Everything Is Illuminated.
I think that's it. Yeah. Okay. I've got the book sitting over here. I've not read it.
Books.
I got the movie, so I.
So why would you read the book?
Why do I need to read the book?
Come on.
But it's directed by Stephen Daltrey, who did Billy Elliot and About a Boy. Which I've heard, it seems to be getting more accolades because it has Stephen Daltrey behind it than actually what it was. It's sort of like when you see a movie, like, and I felt this way about A Single Man a couple years ago, where people were just like fawning over that because it was Colin Firth doing a great acting performance,
right,
rather than actually being a great movie.
Yeah.
You know,
well, this is the one I feel like this was one that was like when they did, was it the Golden Globes where they pushed back the voting so that like that people could see Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. And wasn't this film like the other one that they were kind of saying like, oh, well, we want to make sure people see Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close because it's supposed to be a big hit.
Yeah, they've been pushing it. That was going to be their big award film, but it was like
it seems to kind of have died off.
It took a lot of time in post, and I think they ended up having to get it rescored in just a couple weeks or something like that. So, it is one that I think more people. I think, and you get a lot of this, especially in stuff like. And I'm a member of the organization, but I'll tell you, when the Broadcast Film Critics Association, when they gave their awards out of their 14 that were on their live show. I had voted for only one of the
Wow.
I mean, everything else I voted something else.
Yeah.
And it was only the only one I agreed with was A Separation, which was going to win anyways for Best Foreign Film. That's got the Oscar locked up. I'm sorry. That's the way it is. So it did feel like there are ones where they're like, well, we have to vote for this. We have to at least nominate it because it's Stephen Daldry. You
right.
know?
All right. So prestigious. So. And that's, is Sandra Bullock and Tom Hanks in this one?
Yeah, but they're sort of, eh.
Yeah.
They're good actors. They're both good actors.
Right. It just seems like, you know, it's like, oh, we've got two Oscar winners in here. And,
yeah.
You know, it seems like it's trying awfully hard to be that Oscar film, but it doesn't seem like it's going to happen in any way.
Yeah. But Sandra Bullock won the Oscar for
it. Oh, don't get me. You don't want to go there.
I don't?
No. I think the longest review I ever wrote on my blog was for The Blind Side because I hated that movie so much. Uh-huh. And I was just offended watching it, and I came home and I wrote, you know, a book about how much I hated it. And it's just become like the bane of my existence, because anytime I start explaining why I hate it, depending, like, I tried explaining it to my sister, for example, and all she could think of was, no, it's a nice movie about a woman who helps a poor guy. And as I start going on, I'm like, well, of course she does. She helps this poor black guy because he can't do anything on his own because he's black and blah, blah. And she's like, and so she looks at me, she's like, God, you're so racist. I'm like, no, the movie is racist. I'm explaining why the movie is racist. To which my grandmother turned to me and said, Emily, I didn't know you were a racist. So I'm just like, this movie is tearing me apart in every direction. But yes. And I think of like when Antichrist came out, like Charlotte, like, and I understand. People don't like
Wait a
Antichrist.
Minute, did we just leap from The Blind Side to Antichrist?
Yes, because think about it. Sandra Bullock won the Oscar when Charlotte Gainsbourg was not nominated for Antichrist, when she cut off her own clitoris, damn it.
Well, you know, who hasn't done that?
Well, when Sandra really Bullock drunk. Hasn't.
How do you know? She maybe just didn't do it on film.
That is a very good point. Touche, sir, touche.
You know what's funny is I think The Blind Side has gotten... The Help gets a lot of the same complaints. The whole white, right. You know, only by the whites do the black African Americans actually succeed. I've heard that complaint a lot.
I haven't seen The Help, so I can't speak to that. But okay. That was my impression from the trailer.
What's funny about those is both movies, both The Help and The Blind Side, I was dreading. I mean, dreading going to see. I mean, it was one of those things where they could have screened it in my backyard and it would have been a chore to get off my couch to walk out the door to go see it. Both those movies, I thought, I'm like, oh my God, because I watched the trailers and I'm like, oh Jesus, these are going to be so fucking terrible. And then I saw each one and I'm like, I liked The Help better than I liked The Blind Side, but I'm kind of like, when I saw The Blind Side, I go, well, it was effectively done. It has its problems, but so, and I think it was more that expectation because I thought it was going to be the worst cheesiest, crappiest movie I see. And then I saw it, I'm like, it wasn't bad. You know, it was okay. And same, and actually The Help, it was better than I thought it would be. So I agree with everything you say about like The Blind Side. But I'm kinda like, I'm still like, yeah, it was okay.
I guess it helps to have lowered expectations.
Yeah. But I think that it's what's funny, here's an interesting story about The Blind Side. I do a radio show. I do call-ins to a radio show, WREC in Memphis, Tennessee, which is where, The Blind Side took place. And it's on the AM station, which is the big talk radio station, which plays all the conservative talk shows. And in fact, right after my segment, they do like the Rush Limbaugh morning update.
So you fit right in there.
Well, it's hysterical because... there's a guy I know in Memphis, and I said to him, I tweeted him out once, and I go, oh, you should listen to me on the radio. He goes, well, I don't listen to that station. And he's like, oh, I listen. He's like, oh, I listened to you today. And he's like, I turned it off right away when I was done because it started playing, the Rush Limbaugh thing.
Right.
So and the reason I mention it being a conservative, all the conservative talk is the Twoies. Is that how you say their names? Twoies?
Twoies, I think.
Twoies in Memphis. They're conservative. They're Republican. They're known in the community. So I'm literally getting on the phone to do this, knowing this, going, and I know they're going to ask because they're local people. I'm like, I could honestly be reviewing this and they could be listening to me.
Oh, pressure.
Yeah, so I'm like, I'm going to be really careful what I say. Because also this station, a lot of stations, if it's a local thing, they don't want you to trash anything local.
Sure.
You know, I mean, God, when I do, because Justin Timberlake's from Memphis. And
so you love Friends with Benefits.
Well, whenever there's a movie, I'm like, well, and I like Justin Timberlake. I think
not the singer, actor.
I think he's actually a good actor. So whenever I review even a crappy movie, he'd like Love Guru. I'm like, well, he was good in it. Everything else was bad, but you know, so
see it for Justin Timberlake, but don't actually see it.
Exactly. Just, you know, just go to his, you know, see his spots and then leave right afterwards. So yeah, it was weird. It's weird to actually know. Because as a critic, you go out there and you can say some of the meanest things.
Yeah.
And then, but to know that there's a damn good chance that the people that the movie was made about are listening to the radio that morning. Yeah. So
it's the same with, I mean, if I write about, you know, if I write about, I don't know, Underworld, I know Kate Beckinsale and the Swedish directors aren't reading my review. But if I
You'd be surprised.
Well, if I watch like some independent film, and even if it's not necessarily like, you know, the kind of independent film made for $10, if it's, you know, might be something that went straight to Netflix, every once in a while I will get a comment or an email from the director or from someone involved in it.
Yeah.
And it always makes me realize, oh wait, people who make this film sometimes are reading this. And you know, you approach it differently at that point, just because, you know, I don't mind personally dissing a film that was made for $90 million. Because, I mean, they have beds of money to sleep on. And
no excuse when you have a shitty movie at $90 million.
Yeah, but,
no
but for something that, you know, clearly was made differently, then I do have to sit back and be like, all right, let me just, you know, I'm not going to be cruel here. Let me, you know, be a little more objective. But it does affect you sometimes when you know that.
Yeah.
It's a little scary sometimes because then you also find where you live.
I think it's funny because this actually happened this week. I was watching a movie, and a lot of times if I'm watching a movie, I'll tweet about it. I don't do that Get Glue garbage. I just go and I go on Twitter.
Sure.
Because really, why do I want to log into Get Glue?
I don't understand
so
that at all.
Tweet out.
Like, why do I care what you're watching if you're not responding when I talk to you about it on Twitter?
I'll just put it on Twitter and say I'm watching this as opposed to logging into the Get Glue so that can tweet for me. But anyways, a lot of times I'll be like, hey, I'm watching this. Like today, this week I was watching Donner Pass, which came out on DVD this week. It's a little small independent. I'm watching Donner Pass, blah, blah, blah. And I'm watching it, and I check my email. Suddenly, Donner Pass Film is following you on Twitter. And I'm like, okay.
Oh, shit.
Oh, no. Because I've had that happen quite several times where you'll tweet that you're – never with a big movie, but you'll tweet that you're watching a movie, and then suddenly – either they've got an alert going on, they auto follow you back, and then like the director of this movie, Donner Pass, started following me, and I'm like, all right, I better not be insulting,
right,
you know, because it's an independent film, you know, you don't want to be.
And I mean, there's some like Troma, like Lloyd Kaufman's on Twitter, and anytime you mention anything regarding a Troma movie, I guess he must have an alert where you suddenly get retweeted and tweeted back at, and it's kind of like, ah. Okay, and I like Casper Van Dien does that too.
Casper Van Dien follows me.
Yeah, I don't know if he follows me, but he's definitely like tweet because I Starship Troopers is my fourth favorite film of all time.
I love Starship Troopers.
It will come up in conversation quite often in my daily life, much less
as it should.
Exactly, because it's fucking amazing. and like he will often tweet back at, you know, and it's not just somebody like retweeting. Like sometimes he will actually comment on it. So, you know, I will never say anything bad about Casper Van Dien ever.
What's funny is we do live tweets every Saturday night and we watch a movie and we tweet about it. He started his Twitter account right around the time we were live tweeting Starship Troopers.
Oh, nice.
So he followed a whole bunch of us.
Right.
And it was really cool. You know, because he started following me. And it was like when he had like 200 followers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, yeah, Casper Van Dien.
Right?
Now, I don't know if he still follows me. You mean like, fuck that noise. Click unfollow that guy. He tweets way too much. But yeah, so it's interesting to get that every now and then. You know, I don't temper my opinion.
Right, but it kind of like, it almost keeps you on watch sometimes. Because it reminds you like every once in a while, oh, yeah, real people actually made this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Now, if I'm tweeting that I'm watching, you know George Lucas, I'm watching. I don't think Lucas is out there on Twitter. He doesn't have time to read every fucking tweet about himself because it's all just fuck
he
you,
would have
fuck
killed
you.
Killed himself by now if he did.
Yeah. Although here's the in one defense of Lucas, I give him credit because he doesn't let it get to him. You know, he doesn't let the critics. He doesn't give a shit.
Yeah.
And I have to respect that. Even somebody like Michael Bay, who has kind of built a persona of not giving a shit what the critics say, still gives a shit. Because every now and then you see him make some snarky comment about it.
Or look at Kevin Smith, whose whole thing is that he doesn't give a shit, except that's all he can talk about.
Yeah, fuck Kevin Smith. I'm done with that noise. But like George Lucas, I mean, you could sit there and say the worst things about you. He's like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Because I'll just re-release these movies again and make it $10 million a piece.
What do you think about that, Star Wars nerd?
Yeah, suck it, you know. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he doesn't sue people for, I mean, now if you like were making Darth Vader replicas and selling them for $50 million, then Lucasfilm would be like, yeah, you can't do that.
Right.
But, you know, people make it. Fan films, re-edits, all this stuff. He's like, have at it, because I own the rights. And
In the end, you will never re-release the Star Wars Holiday Special. So, yeah.
So, but I give Lucas a lot of credits for being, hey, you know what? That's okay. He's very zen about that. I agree. Especially for as much angst people have about him.
Yeah.
So, extremely loud and incredibly close gets a kind right on the cusp. Kind of rocks, kind of sucks. I wasn't wild about it.
Okay.
Let's talk about box office from this last week. Thank God, The Devil Inside did not hold well.
Well, no, I don't think anybody expected that. I haven't seen it yet. I'll probably catch it on DVD at some point because I'm a glutton for punishment like that.
Oh, it's bad. It's a shame on that movie. Contraband 1 on the 4-day weekend got $28.5 million. Beauty and the Beast in 3D got just over 22. Not nearly as close to The Lion King, but damn, if you can get $22 million opening weekend on a re-release.
Yeah, for a 20-year-old movie. The Lion King was kind of such a broad scope and audience. Beauty and the Beast, it's hard to drag little boys to Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, but also with Beauty and the Beast versus Lion King, I mean, this is it follows its box office originally. I mean, Beauty and the Beast did very well.
Right. But The Lion King was one of the biggest films of its time.
It's like $400 million domestic. So, and then Mission Impossible still sticking out strong in the third place. Then Joyful Noise at just under $14 million.
It's I'm going to bump it up this week.
Are you going
to
check it out?
I'm going to see Joyful Noise this weekend. Yes, I am.
Are you going to look at the man in the mirror?
I'm going to learn many lessons about friendship and singing and... I love Dolly Parton. That's all it comes down to.
I don't think she's real anymore. I think like her little toe on her left foot is still the original Dolly Parton. Everything else has been replaced.
But it's been replaced carefully.
Not very well. She's kind of scary. I mean, you could make an alien invasion movie and have it star Dolly Parton. And
it would be the best fucking alien invasion movie of all time.
You know, it's like Conan the Barbarian when they came out with that and they had Rose McGowan. Mm-hmm. And all they did was shaved her hair back a little bit. Suddenly she's freakish. And I'm like, that's a problem when you're like 30. You know, it's kind of like I saw Rachel Dratch in an interview once. You know who she is, of course.
Of course.
And she was talking about how she was doing, I think it was before she got known through Saturday Night Live. And she was doing a role as a background. They're like, okay, we need to make you look homely. And they like put two barrettes in her hair. And that's it. She's like, I am two barrettes away from the crazy, ugly, homely girl.
Oh, poor Rachel Dratch.
So, I like Rachel Dratch.
I do too. I always just feel bad for her though.
I would love to see her like get like a breakout Bridesmaids kind of movie.
Mm-hmm.
Just because she's the most unlikely movie star in the entire universe.
Yeah. And TV star too, apparently.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, The Devil Inside tumbled 73%. I wish that would be it. Now, what's interesting is that's approximately what the aforementioned Friday the 13th remake tumbled. And that tumble actually killed the thoughts of a sequel. I wish that that would happen with The Devil Inside. Although I don't think
Inside was it was made for what? Like a million, if even that?
It was acquired for a million.
Yeah. I don't know that they'll do a sequel. Yeah. I mean, they've done sequels to less successful films. Like, I mean, they're doing a sequel to Piranha when Piranha was kind of a box office bomb.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, I would be fine if it meant more independent films getting theatrical releases.
Yeah.
But, you know, because, I mean, nice. I don't know. I'm
you haven't seen The Devil Inside. Let's talk next week after you see it. You
know? I will. But, like, I watch a lot of, you know, straight-to-DVD horror films, and I watch so many that are really good and are made so cheaply. And it's, you know, when people complained about, oh, horror sucks now. No, it doesn't. It's just that theatrical horror kind of sucks. So it's a shame that I guess the wrong things are getting chosen for theater.
Well, I think this is what happens with horror. And here's the thing. A lot of people are like, oh, horror sucks now. I'm like, no.
No, it's
horror has always had problems.
Yes.
Because what happens, you have the one movie. It all comes out of this weird independent realm. And then something clicks. And then it's everything suddenly fresh.
Better. Yeah.
And then everything copycats. Mm-hmm. I even remember when they remade Prom Night. Couple years ago, everyone's like, "Oh, the original Prom Night was so awesome." I'm like,
No,
it wasn't.
Prom Night 2 is awesome. Prom Night, not so awesome.
Well, and the thing with the Prom Night was a slasher.
It's a mediocre slasher at best. It has a great cast, as Leslie Nielsen and Jamie Lee Curtis, but it's not a good movie.
But and that's the whole thing is it's like back then it was just a crappy knockoff of Friday the 13th, you know, kind of thing. It's just another angle. So yeah, I mean, and that's always what happened. That's what happened when Saw and you had Saw and Hostel come out. You had The Ring, and that started the J horror, and that burned itself
out. That died out. So you had Saw, and then you had torture porn,
and then found footage. That's going to die out soon. I mean,
I hope so.
I don't think it's going to have much longer. I think the audience is going to get fickle soon. And I've said this before. I can't wait. Like. 10 years
well, with
from
now. Found footage, where you're really going to find them is independent horror now. It's the perfect thing because you don't need the budget of equipment.
Yeah, but the problem is that the biggies are poisoning the well. I mean, Paranormal Activity is poisoning that well fast.
Even though I liked one and three. Huh. Yeah, I didn't care for two too much.
I didn't like two either, but I thought three was great. But I think it's poisoning the well because now if you do a found footage horror movie, people are like, it's immediately, oh, this is just, same thing happened with Blair Witch, because you had the big surge of Blair Witch-ish movies back in the early 2000s, and those died away fast, really fast.
Yeah, it's an odd trend, and it's funny, I saw a movie that came, I don't even know if it's officially on DVD yet, but it was an independent horror film with a very similar premise to Paranormal Activity, where it's found footage, and it's this couple in a house alone, and it's really good, and it's equal to, if not better than Paranormal Activity, and it was actually made before it, but it was just, you know, got released later, so now you see it, it's called In Memoriam, if anyone's interested. I would urge you to check it out, but, you know, it's will never really get any notice, because people will always see it as a Paranormal Activity ripoff, and...
Well, it does make sense. You can have the same idea, the same joke in a movie, and it's whatever's fastest to market.
Right.
Like, I saw, I was watching this week... this last weekend, I it was sent for review. What's Your Number? The Anna Faris and Chrisa Evans movie.
Oh yeah,
which is my general thing is with that one. It's not a good movie, but just both of them are very charming.
I could see that,
and it works for them being. It makes it bearable and sort of okay, right. You know. Whereas if it was like Matthew McConaughey and Katherine Heigl, you'd want to just, you know, shoot yourself in the face,
right?
But the opening of that movie has the exact same joke at the beginning of Bridesmaids, which, for the record, I didn't like Bridesmaids. But
I liked it.
The scene where she gets up in the morning and she fixes her makeup and gets back in bed, exact same thing happens in What's Your Number. Now, you look at it, and they were released like 3 months apart. So, obviously, one wasn't stealing the joke from the other.
Right.
And that's a common joke. In fact, I was just watching a movie. I think it was, I was just watching 2.5 Men, and they make a comment about that. That's apparently not uncommon, which is a dumbass move for a woman to do, because you're just setting yourself up for failure at that point. Just
yeah, but you can look really bad in the morning.
Yeah, so let it be, you know, because then you're going to continue, then you're going to have to, you know, I mean, you don't want to fart at the dinner table or
anything. No, but I agree. It's why I never understood women who pad their bras. Hey, if you actually get to the point, he's going to know.
Yeah. You know, it's but if you watch it, if you've seen, and I remember thinking, I'm like, it's like, almost beat for beat the same scene. And they were obvious that this movie was obviously in the can before Bridesmaids came out. So but the fact that Bridesmaids was first, it makes you be like, oh, they're ripping off Bridesmaids. I'm like, well, really not.
Well, yeah. People think about it, but happens.
People are stupid. So anyways, what do you think is going to win this weekend?
So what do we have coming out? We have Haywire, Red Tails, Underworld are the big three.
Yes. Yeah. Extremely loud and incredibly close, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's another football weekend, right? People are watching the football this weekend.
Is it the football? I don't know. I'm not a football fan.
Oh, no, but...
Are we a week away from the Super Bowl? I know there's a week between playoffs and Super Bowl.
There's a week off. I think not this week. Next weekend is the week off.
We sound like such idiots. We're like, what is it? What's
it's
going on?
It's a game where they throw the ball and they run with the ball. So I don't know if that means that, like, men don't go to the theaters or, like, you know, the women don't. I don't know. But I would guess.
I don't buy that whole that the Super Bowl. I don't buy the playoffs kill that. Because
buy the fact that last year The Roommate won its weekend because it was a Super Bowl weekend.
No, that's not. There were just shitty movies out last year.
Right, well, yeah. But, I mean, I would assume if I had to look at those, I'm guessing Haywire will take it. I don't think it will be a huge hit. But I think it will probably get good reviews. It will get, if people, I mean, Contagion was a pretty big hit when it came out, and maybe people will know that. But, I mean, also, if Contraband won last weekend, it makes me think, hey, why we'll win this weekend. Just that, like, people want action. People aren't looking for, like, the, you know, prestigious movie or the war movie. They're just going to want to go see what's going to be the most entertaining film. Yeah. And, I mean, I don't see Underworld having a resurgence of people going to see the fourth film in a franchise that never had a huge showing. So I'm gonna put my money on Haywire.
I think you're right. I think Haywire is going to do well. I think it's got a lot of buzz. I think Red Tails is going to open very soft.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'll play relatively well to the African-American community, but I don't think outside of that.
Yeah.
People really, because it's going to have the stick. You're right. I think it's going to have the stigma of Lucas. But I think more that just, it doesn't, there's nothing to grab anybody unless you're really.
It's essentially a war movie being released in January. Yeah.
And there's, like, no big stars. I mean, yeah, it's got Terrence Howard and Cuba Gooding Jr., but it's not – so it doesn't have that star power. I think it's going to – like I said, it'll play well in the African-American community, and people are interested in the Tuskegee Airmen.
But it's not a Tyler Perry movie. It's not going to, you know
– although it would have been cool to throw Tyler Perry in a dress in the movie to see if it would have done better.
They should throw him in a dress in every movie to see if it does better.
They should have had him as the guy play the guitar going, yeah, I think this is going to be
add him in Beauty and the Beast in 3D and see if that bumps it up. Exactly. I actually wouldn't be surprised. That's still out this week, right?
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if that, like, holds strong at number two.
It'll hold strong, but yeah,
I
think
real kids movie out.
Right? Haywire's going to do well. Yeah, well, you're right about that. But I think Haywire's going to do well. I think Underworld. Here's the problem with Underworld: fourth in the franchise, bringing Kate Beckinsale back, she's not a draw. Nobody gives
a shit. After she basically said she would never do it again. So.
Yeah, well, and it's like they went from her to Rona Mitra, who's basically Kate Beckinsale light.
When I saw that movie, I didn't know that wasn't Kate Beckinsale.
I know, they look exactly
the same. I just assumed it was the same person. I thought it was the same character or something. I had no idea.
Well, didn't she... Rona Mitra did that one Neil Marshall movie.
Doomsday, which I love.
Yeah, and I'm like, I didn't even realize it wasn't Kate Beckinsale until I saw the credits rolling, going to see the movie.
They're both British and skinny and dark-haired. Like, how am I supposed to decipher that?
Yeah, like, one's nose is slightly smaller than the other, and, like, that's the only difference.
They both wear tight leather. And, like, look good in it. I got nothing. One of them was in Tiptoes. That's the only other way I can tell.
So, it's also 3D. And while, you know, Beauty and Beast did well in 3D, I still think that unless there's a real reason to go see a movie in 3D, the audience isn't going to... And again, going back... And finally, the press is reporting it this way. It's about the ticket price.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about 3D. It's not people are rejecting 3D. It's people are rejecting having to pay $5 extra to go see the movie.
Yeah, when it's not worth it most of the time.
It's barely worth it to pay, you know, the 9 or 10 bucks to see it, mm-hmm. at least in Ohio. No one wants
17
to pay.
Here.
Oh, jeez.
Well, it's like 15 if you buy it beforehand. It's 17, you know. And if you want to go to a movie on a Friday night, you probably have to buy your tickets online. So.
Jeez, does it give you a hand job in the process too?
I wish.
Yeah.
I guess I do.
I wish anyways, no matter what. Because
I mean, if you go to like the 42nd Street Theater, that can still happen.
Yeah, that can happen, with or without, you know, infected needles.
Yeah. Yeah, when I saw Sin City years ago,
I got a hand job with an infected needle.
No, well, I didn't, but my friend.
But my friend did.
My friend sat next to a man who was giving himself a hand job
during
the
what movie? Sin City.
Sin City. Yeah, and we went to like a midnight showing on 42nd Street, which is not the 42nd Street of yore. It is the Disney 42nd Street.
Yeah.
And like the theater was packed and this like old man kind of like came in and the only seat open was like a middle seat next to her. So we you know, squeezes through us and sits down.
Oh, so it's a packed theater. That's even worse. I mean it'd be one thing if you're in the corner.
Maybe that's what he wanted. But like 30 minutes into the movie, like I saw him get up and leave. I'm like, well, that was weird. And then I see my friend like just staring ahead. I'm like, what was that about? She's like, he took his penis out.
Oh, he took it out. He didn't even like, he wasn't even like.
I don't think he was like jerking it or anything, but he just kind of like, it was like the final episode.
He's like, it needs some air.
It's like, hey, it's hot in here. Hey, but this wants to watch the movie too.
I guess my question is, because the immediate thing I went to is like, what scene was that during? Like if it was the Jessica Alba dancing on the, which isn't a very long scene. I'm like, okay, I can see that. But if it's him chopping up Elijah Wood, that's not something you want to masturbate to.
I don't begrudge anybody their own personal preference. Hey, well, you like the Enema movie. I'm not judging.
I didn't say I like the Enema movie. Well,
I just said you saw the Enema movie.
Well, just because I saw an Enema movie doesn't mean I liked it.
That's fair.
You know, hey, I'll try anything once.
That's true. I saw The Blind Side and I didn't like it, so you're right. Even.
Which could also be called the Enema movie. Uh-huh. Anyway, speaking of Enemas, let's do the Fat Guy 5.
Yeah.
And this is in honor of Red Tails, or as I like to call it, the Lando apology.
Nice.
This is five favorite non-Star Wars George Lucas projects, which is actually kind of hard to assemble as a list because pretty much everything he does is Star Wars.
For the most part, yeah.
Especially now. So the first one, this is you. You were indignant.
I was shocked that you didn't have this on your list.
Yes.
And the only rationale I can give is that I don't know, maybe male genitalia blinds you to the brilliance of Labyrinth.
No, I don't think it was that.
Okay. Labyrinth, it was 1986. now, I know I'm
like
not
how
a
you I like how you say Labyrinth's 1986 like there's a remake coming down the road.
They're better than fucking not. That's I am not one of those people who's like, don't remake my favorite film of all time is Dawn of the Dead, and I like the remake.
Don't rape my childhood.
But I think, like, it would be, I don't think any man can, and I mean this literally, no man can fill David Bowie's codpiece in Labyrinth.
I don't even know if David Bowie could fill his codpiece.
No, I tried for Halloween last year. I was the Goblin King. And the only reason I did it was because I really was like excited to have a codpiece and a penis.
You're way shorter than David Bowie. You and I have met in person. You're way shorter than David Bowie.
Oh, I know. I'm not a fair substitute whatsoever. But I mean, Labyrinth is one of my favorite films of all time. I don't think you can enjoy it if you didn't watch it growing up. I've known people that have watched it as adults and been like, yeah, it's neat. There's Muppets.
It's a wackety schmackety movie.
I understand the genius of it. But.
It's a wackety schmackety movie if you have not seen it in the 80s.
Pretty much.
Yeah, it's a good movie though. I mean, it's weird, but the thing that it was made at a time where they're like, it's David Bowie, he has to sing in it, and you're like, what the hell?
Yeah, he does.
He suddenly there and he goes, you remind me of the Babe. Boom! And what I'm like, babe? What the hell are we talking about?
The Babe with the power. What power? Power of voodoo. Who do you do? What remind me of the Babe?
Wow.
I could do the whole movie. I'm not kidding.
I'm sure you can. Well, and what's funny about that is I get that because the 80s were like that, where they're like, if you're going to have a music person, it's like whenever you had like Aretha Franklin show up on a TV show,
right,
she was going to sing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
like Mikhail Baryshnikov had to dance in anything he ever did.
Anything. Maybe. He could have been in space and he'd have to dance.
Well, yeah.
You know?
Where's that movie?
That would be awesome. But, and they got away from that. Now you have
White
actual singers will act and not have to sing.
Boring.
But what's so funny about David Bowie and Labyrinth, it's like they kind of were going with that 80s mentality where you have to have the songs in there because it's David Bowie. And I'm like, he's done a ton of movies. And he did The Hunger. He didn't sing in The Hunger. He didn't sing in The Man Who Fell to Earth. There's a lot of movies he did. Didn't sing a lick. Yet they're suddenly like, oh, no, we got to have him in this.
Well, I think in part because, I mean, it came after The Dark Crystal, which did not have songs.
No, it
and did not.
Did not
do that well. Dark Crystal was not a big hit.
It was a great fucking movie, though.
Yeah, it's wonderful. But I think with Labyrinth, they tried, okay, let's make it a little more upbeat. Let's try to capture like the Muppet audience a little more. We'll put songs in there. We'll have it, we'll have humans in there. And I mean, I won't objectively say that Labyrinth is a better movie than The Dark Crystal. I'm blinded. I can't say that because to me, the Labyrinth is one of the greatest movies of all time, even though I know it's not.
Right up there with Starship Troopers.
It is. It's my number five, actually, just below wow. Starship Troopers.
That's great. Let's move on to the next one. And this one was mine. It's Howard the Duck.
Howard the Duck.
I recently saw this movie. Again, we live tweeted it a couple, I think we did it in November. You know, I can't remember when we did it. I think it was before November. We do turkeys in November. But we did this, and it's an amazing movie because it's so bad, but it's like actually, it's like a wine where it would taste bitter if you bought it on the first vint, you know, right when it was bottled. But if you wait long enough, it actually has a certain appeal to it.
Mm-hmm.
And what's neat about it is it's a George Lucas movie, and it's a complete disaster. It's a hot mess.
Oh, yeah.
But it's unlike any of his other movies. You know, I mean, if you watch, even if you watch Red Tails, you're like, you see total elements of Star Wars in that movie. This one, it's just this weird, it is like this bizarre cesarean section birth that you didn't realize there was something else in there after you got your beautiful child out. And you're like, what is this? It resembles nothing of a human being.
Why is there a duck having sex with Leia Thompson?
And why does, there's a duck in the beginning and it has tits.
It does.
Ducks, there, he has mammary glands and they're birds.
And how does the duck have sex with Leia Thompson if he's not wearing pants the whole movie and we know he doesn't have, wait, or does he wear pants? He does wear pants, doesn't he?
He wears pants.
Which is weird in its own. No. Why is a duck wearing pants?
I mean, why? That's ridiculous. Donald Duck never wears pants. Daffy Duck never wears pants. No. Why are we starting this precedence?
Well, Howard the Duck was based on a very popular comic book, I believe, right?
Yeah, but the comic book's completely different.
But it's more adult, right? Which is kind of what they tried to do. And then there was a back off of, wait a minute, we're doing like a $100 million movie about a duck. We need to be like, kid friendly.
Yeah, it's a duck, so it has to be goofy and wacky. Yeah.
Yeah, Tim Robbins' early appearance, right?
That's right. He's in that. He's very, very young in that. So yeah, Howard the Duck. The next one is American Graffiti, which I'm not a big fan of American Graffiti, but I respect it. And what's funny is American Graffiti, the entire plot of American Graffiti is Luke's story before the droids show up.
Hmm.
Only not on Tatooine, but in Southern California.
Okay.
That is totally what it is. It is Ron Howard plays Luke Skywalker.
Yeah.
In Southern California, which is George Lucas. Because if you watch it, knowing the Star Wars thing, you're just like, oh no, that's totally, boom, that's him.
That's a good point. I never thought of it that way.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I was saying this, a Contraband from last week is basic. What was it? I pointed out it has the exact same story as something else big. I'm drawing a blank on it because it's late and I'm tired. But, oh, it's lost. All right. I'm an idiot.
It's a good mirror to view the movie through.
Yeah. Just forget what I said. Just bloop, bloop, erase it from your mind. Blip, 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 blip. I don't know what that does.
Just think about Howard the Duck.
Howard the Duck having sex with Leah Thompson.
Sing the theme song.
She was hot. She was a young hot then.
That was her time period.
Yeah.
She was the late 80s. She was a hot mom in Back to the Future.
Yeah, exactly.
And Howard the Duck was right. Hey, if you were an actor and you got this script, hey, it's the next big, it's a huge budget. It's based on a popular comic book. It's sci-fi-ish, which is really big right now. Why would you turn it down? Because I think that's a movie, too, that went through, like, script hell and everything else. And
oh, it was all over the place.
Yeah, right? I mean, I'm sure the original vision for that film was probably pretty interesting. It's still interesting, just not in a good way.
Yeah. Oh, I know what I was going to say about Contraband. It's basically Han Solo's story. Contraband is him, because it's about him.
He owes something.
Mark Wahlberg, his brother-in-law, was smuggling something and had to dump the shipment, and then it is being basically kidnapped by the drug dealers who dumped it, which is basically what happened with Han Solo in Jabba the Hutt. He dumped his shipment because he got boarded, and literally the ship gets boarded, and he dumps the shipment. So it's Han Solo's backstory.
Okay.
There's no Chewbacca in it, though.
Nah, then what's the point?
I know, exactly. The last one on the the next one on the list is THX-1138, The Electronic Labyrinth, which is actually the original short film, the student film that George Lucas did, just because it has no story to it. It's just him running. But it's it's so amazing because it's that minutia of technology that Lucas gets into. It's like a 20-minute film.
Mm.
But it's all these people just trying to track him down. Now, he made the THX-10138 into a feature, which, in my opinion, isn't as good as the original.
See, my only experience, I've almost watched this movie about like 20 times in my life. It's been on, I've recorded it, and then I haven't watched it. It was on InstaWatch for a while.
The feature?
The feature, yeah. Because, I mean, the short is, I'm sure there's ways to see it. But then what happened was one day I was flipping channels, and I saw it was on. I'm like, oh, I know what this is. I can tell by the way it looks. It's THX. I've always wanted to watch this. Not realizing I was watching the last scene. So then I'm like, well, I guess I saw that movie. I guess one day I'll watch it. I will never probably watch it.
Yeah. I recently watched it because Warner Brothers sent me the Blu-ray to review.
Okay.
And it was the, they have on the Blu-ray both the original and the
short.
No, they have the short on there, but they have the original. I think they also have, the original, but they have the George Lucas one. He's done that to all his movies. American Graffiti, he hasn't added like Wookiees to it or anything, but
yet.
He did go back and add stuff to THX-1138. So it's the new version of it,
okay.
Which is funny because the original was rated G, the when they remastered it and went through the MPAA.
Rated negative G.
It's rated R now.
Wow.
Because it has nudity. Back then you could have nudity and get a G rating.
Yeah, that's true.
Because there was no sex. It was just, was in a very non-sexual nudity sort of
right,
way.
Right.
Anyways, weird. The last one is All Things Indiana Jones. That's, of course, the granddaddy of all non-Star Wars projects because, like we said, it's kind of in the same wheelhouse as Star Wars, but it's not Star Wars. And it is arguably the most successful thing Lucas has done.
And until part four, so, it's, you know, fairly Earth-centered.
I like part four.
Oh.
I will defend part four.
Well, in fairness... Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, part three is Last Crusade is my favorite of the bunch. Part four, I've only seen once, and I saw it. I was living in Russia when it came out. I was teaching in Moscow, and it was coming out to, there's a couple of English language theaters. So I was really excited to go see it on the big screen. They were going to show it at the English theater. So yay, okay, I'll go see it. So I go to see it, and as I buy my ticket, they hand me a headset. And I noticed there's like a little piece of paper on the ticket window that says, due to legal issues, Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull will not be shown with its original English soundtrack. However, we're providing hearing, you know, headphones for you to hear the movie in English.
Okay.
To hear the movie with an English speaker. I'm like, okay, I guess.
Was it like a Russian speaker? Dude, was it like Boris and Natasha?
No, it was a British speaker, meaning it was one British woman doing the entire film. So you sit down, you put your headphones on, and Indiana Jones walks out, and it's, you know.
Hello, what's going on?
I'm I push posh.
But Cheerio.
It was one woman doing the entire movie. No,
did she do different voices?
Dr. Jones, I'll do what I want. No, Dr. Jones. And she tries to do a Russian accent on occasion. I don't know why they couldn't have two people do it. I don't know why they had to have a woman do the whole
That's
thing.
That's hilarious.
No wonder
these movies don't do well in Russia.
Apparently
no,
not.
No wonder Puss in Boots is like the biggest hit Russia has ever had.
Well, like, I don't know if it was because there's like the Russians are the villains in the movie, if that had anything to do with it. But it's like, I think at one point they must have filmed it all at once because there's like about a minute where there's no sound whatsoever.
Would she go out and get a coffee or something?
Break.
Wait, couldn't they have just paused or could they have given her some Depends?
It's Moscow. I don't know. Things are different there. Things are very different.
That's amazing.
So as a result, though, I think I like the movie more because I think, like, to me, I wasn't liking it. And having that added weird element made it kind of enjoyable in its own way. Like, I have no desire to revisit it because I don't know.
That's hilarious. Were they, when they're changing the lines, she's like, oh, Kate Blanchett's when the person's being eaten by the ants, does she go, oh, isn't it terrible? What happened that the Americans threw you in there? You defenseless poor Russian friend.
Well, the worst thing was like any scene where there were people arguing back and forth, she would like try to do both parts for a while and then just kind of give up and it would just be a really slow conversation she would have.
Was it like she'd be like, oh, what blah, 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 blah,
blah, blah, blah, blah, blah. No, I won't give you those alien heads. No, I really need those alien heads. No, I won't give you those alien heads. And I'm watching this, I'm like, I don't think that's the dialogue. I think it's gotta be a little more specific than that. But that's what it came out to be.
You, I want an abortion. No, you don't need one. wait, that's not
abortion
in the movie.
Abortion's illegal. Wait a minute. No, I'm sorry. I'm reading my BlackBerry right now. I mean, just be done, yeah. Yeah, it was strange.
That's hilarious. Yeah. I would pay to see that.
I'd rather watch it that way than any other way again.
I know. I'm in the minority of defending that movie, but oh well.
Yeah.
Like I said, I don't get hung up on this whole "you rape my childhood" business. So.
Yeah. I mean, I just found it not as enjoyable as the other three.
Okay, I'll give you that.
I mean, hey, if it helps at all, I really like Return of the Jedi more than A New Hope.
Okay.
Empire is my favorite, but followed by Jedi. And screw me, I like the Ewok movies.
Yeah. Okay. They were fun for a while.
The second Ewok movie. The first one, there's an Ewok dies, and it's really sad.
Well, yeah. Well, you got to kill an Ewok. It's not a movie until you kill an Ewok.
No, because in the second one, they don't kill an Ewok. They just kill the little girl's parents at the very beginning of the movie. But you don't have to worry about that ever again, because then Ewoks are okay.
Because they're humans, and the Ewoks are cute.
And she gets adopted by Wilford Brimley, so it all works out for everyone.
Anyways. That's the Indiana Jones. Let's move on to the honorable mention is Willow. I'm not a big fan of Willow.
I haven't watched it in a really long time.
But what's funny is if you watch it, it definitely has. You can definitely see episode one creeping into it. So.
I mean, I like that Warwick Davis gets to be in a movie with his own face.
Yeah. That's about it.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right, with that, we're going to go to a break.
Okay.
Welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. We are in our final segment. If you can go back and listen to the middle segment online, if you're listening to this on the radio, you can hear us talk about George Lucas. We go on and on and on about George Lucas a lot.
A lot.
And we talk about his non-Star Wars projects. We talk a little bit about The Blind Side. For some reason, we swerved into that one. Box office and that sort of thing. It's actually a pretty good segment. And so I encourage anybody to go back. It's not too blue. But it's also relevant. So we tended to bridge the gap on that one. But now, what do we have coming up next, Emily?
It would be time for the world-famous DVD Roundup.
That's right. Do you want to take first crack here? Because you're the guest.
All right. I'll go quickly with some of the things I know are coming out that are exciting to me. One would be License to Drive, the 1980-something comedy with the Coreys. The Coreys, I think, made a lot of really bad movies. But License to Drive, I think, is a genuinely funny movie. It has a young Heather Graham in it as well.
Yeah.
Also out on Blu-ray, I believe, is for the classy folks out there, is Belle du Jour, which is Criterion.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the other one.
The other one being some worms. Well, that's okay. That's for the real classy bunch. See, Belle du Jour is a good film, but I'm sure the Criterion DVD probably has really great extras on it because it's Criterion.
Of course, yeah.
I'm more excited about Tremors on Blu-ray because Tremors is a really fun movie. One of the rare 90s genre films that holds up today. So check it out.
That's true. We recently live tweeted that one too. And that one,
it's fun.
It's still great.
It's so much fun. Great characters, great cast, great worms.
What more can you ask for?
Like nothing.
Is that all your picks?
That's all my picks.
All right, we're gonna do the now. My picks this week. What my favorite film of last year was The Ides of March, and that is out on DVD and Blu-ray. So I encourage people to go check that out because it's fantastic. It's a great. It's the Glengarry Glenn Ross of political films. So check that out if you haven't seen it. There's also Traffic, Soderbergh's Traffic, on Criterion Blu-ray. Again, some great special features and such a fantastic film. There's also Mad Season 1 Part 2, which if you don't know
that
what this is...
so confusing.
Yeah, what happened... Well, they do that a lot with like cartoony kind of things. They'll split it up. And this is... Forgets Mad TV, because that was kind of crappy. But Mad is a Cartoon Network show that really emulates the old magazine. It has sketches and jokes and parodies and bits. And while it's not exactly like the old magazine, it's much more like the old magazine than Mad TV ever. And Mad TV was just a ripoff of SNL.
True.
So this one's if you want to kind of have the spirit of that. There's also Merlin, the complete third season, which is a neat little show. Sort of, it's a BBC show that tells the story of a young Merlin and a young King Arthur. There's also Abduction, or as I like to call it, Abduction, because it's got Taylor Lautner in it, and it literally has him in within the first like 5 minutes. He's got his shirt off.
I mean, I don't think he can really act with his shirt on.
No, no, he can't. There's also Division III, Football's Finest, which is not that good, but you know, if you like sort of that, it's Andy Dick playing a football coach. Oh
God, I'm sure it's great.
Yeah, it has some problems. He's kind of crazy. He's also
a little bit.
Way older than I thought he was, because he's kind of old in this movie, and I'm like,
he also lives hard, which ages you faster.
That's right. I think he's only like 16.
He might be.
Yeah.
He graduated with Taylor Lautner.
Yeah, exactly. He doesn't look as good without a shirt on, though. There's also Donner Pass, which is basically a slasher film in the woods about people who go to the area where the Donner Party, camped out and had lunch. Yeah. And then there's Dirty Girl with Juno Temple. Allegedly, I should be getting a DVD of this to review, but I haven't seen it yet. But the stinker is Bucky Larson, Born to be a Star, which is a fascinating film simply because it got made.
Those are this, fun ones.
What's funny is I got this, I watched it, and it's not good. It's not a good movie. It's bad. It's a bad, bad movie. But in watching it, it did not compel me to want to change my list of top 10 worst movies. So at least in my opinion, even though it's the lowest rated movie of 2011 on Rotten Tomatoes with 0%.
But not to you.
To me, there's at least 10 other movies that are worse.
Wow. Ouch.
So yeah, it's not good. Anyways, the review wrap up Haywire, I said rocks. Red Tails kind of sucks. And Underworld Awakening gets a preemptive suck and Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close. It's either going to be a kind of rocks or a kind of sucks. Depends on how much you like award films. Mm. Next week, we've got The Gray, Man on a Ledge, and, One for the Money, starring Katherine Heigl. Are you looking forward to any of these?
The Gray is the one with Liam Neeson.
Yeah.
I will always watch Liam Neeson do anything. So,
punching wolves with bottles on his hands.
That sounds like a good Friday night to me.
What about One for a Money? Would you watch Liam Neeson punching Katherine Heigl?
Yes.
With anything on his hands?
He can be wearing like muffins on his hands that she's like she might be allergic to bananas and he's wearing banana muffins on his hands. I'm there.
So cool. I would watch that.
That would be a great movie.
It would be a great movie.
And then Mikhail Baryshnikov dances in the end.
In space.
Yes.
Real quick, we got about 40 seconds left. Why don't you tell everybody where they can find you and how to get in touch with you and what to listen to you for?
Okay. I'm on Twitter at Deadly Dolls. You can find my website at deadlydollshouse.com, which is where I usually tell you where to go from there. But on iTunes, look for Gleekast, GLEEKAST, or Girls on Film Radio.
Woohoo. Thank you so much again, Emily, for doing
my
the
pleasure.
Show. It's always great to have you back. Always great to have the guests on and talk about different things and get a different and unique perspective on the world. So again, until next time, audience, we will talk to you later and see you at the movies.